greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Turns out in the first sighting since his trial, George Zimmerman, according to the state patrol, George Zimmerman was spotted on a highway helping a family of four escape from a terrible accident. An SUV had overturned. And of all things, I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right? George Zimmerman is the one on the scene who helps rescue the family. Now, NBC is reporting that Zimmerman told the 911 operator he thought the SUV was black. Turns out it was blue. And he was trying to look under the hoodie. But nothing from NBC is reliable. So we'll have to set that aside and wait for the full investigation about this highway rescue to find out what really happened. Then we have, oh, and by the way, after the verdict, the demonstrators, you know, around the country, there's one report that came out right after the Zimmerman trial when he was acquitted. And the AP, the Associated Press, reported demonstrators upset with the verdict protested mostly peacefully in Florida. And that caught my eye, mostly peacefully, because when it's Christians who are trying to save unborn children, right? I'll give you an example here in Denver, Colorado. What was it? Channel 7. I remember them reporting we had a Christian rescue, an Operation Rescue event to try to save babies from being killed at a Planned Parenthood abortion mill. And the news at the top of the hour in the news was this. It was Operation Rescue turned violent today. And I was there. We had video. We must have had a dozen video cameras going. And on the news, you know what video they showed? Because they were all there, too. It was at the height of the rescue movement. And some pro-abortion activists there were lifting one of their own supporters over the wall to say that they could get into the abortion clinic. So they showed pro-aborts lifting one of their own people, you know, putting their hands down to cup under their feet and lifting them over the wall. They showed that, and one of the pro-lifers, his wife, tossed him a sack lunch to her husband because he was sitting at the door of the abortion mill for like 4 hours. So she made a sack lunch for him, tossed it to him, and they said, Operation Rescue became violent today. So contrast that with demonstrators upset with the Zimmerman verdict, protested mostly peacefully in Florida, Milwaukee, Washington, Atlanta, and other cities overnight and into the early Sunday morning. But some broke windows, vandalized police squad cars, and so-and-so. And it's, you know, it's not surprising. It's like when the Pope gave a speech at Regensburg a few years back, and he quoted an emperor from 1,000 years ago who was talking about Muslims. And he said that, quoting from 1,000 years ago, and he said the Muslims tend to be violent. And in protest of the Pope's remarks, there were violent Muslim protests around the world. Broke out spontaneously. So this is all just weird. Also in the news, one day after Flint, Michigan resident Michael Moore filed for divorce, then the city of Detroit, not to be outdone, filed for bankruptcy right down the street. The Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, I'll have to tell you later about a Dr. Weatherhead, an expert on global warming from CU up in Boulder. I heard a talk she gave this past week, and it was funny. She's talking on, you know, global warming, and she's Dr. Weatherhead. But anyway, Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, NBC reported just a few days ago that a senior Muslim Brotherhood official said that they're willing to die for their cause. And of course, that can be arranged. Now, for political correctness reasons, he said that we're willing to die for our cause. And then he added something I thought was hysterical. He added, for democracy. All of a sudden, what? Allah and the Quran, they stand for democracy. Sort of reminds me of David Barton. But the Quran doesn't advocate for democracy, does it? No. And it's only because these terrorists happened to win a lot of seats in the last election in Egypt and then were booted out of the presidency by the military that they're pining for democracy. The good old days when democracy ruled in Egypt. That's what they're willing to die for, democracy in Egypt. Go figure. And so it's democracy is dangerous because, as Jesus said, the majority, you know, when Jesus spoke to the majority, what would he say? He would say, well, you people being evil, right? That's how he talked. Now, you all being evil. I like to speak to a crowd and say that. You all being evil. The Denver Atheists had a conference this weekend. I attended about 7 hours worth. And they were so upset. Some of the themes were they were upset that Christians will teach children that there is a hell. And also against evolution, that we evolved from animals. And they said it's cruel to teach these things to kids. It's like emotional abuse of children. And I was thinking, so what is the alternative? A woman who would speak later, I didn't know she was one of the speakers, and I don't know that she's an atheist, but she was invited to speak on global warming, and her name is Dr. Weatherhead from CU up in Boulder. She's with NOAA and all, and she is quite the scientist, quite the expert. And during a break, she asked me, she said, so which of these groups are you with? Because there were about 120 atheist groups represented by about 120 people. And I said, well, I'm with Denver Bible Church. I'm the pastor. And she went, what are you undercover here? No, not necessarily. I didn't want to pay to get in, so I asked to be comped a ticket as a talk show host. And they were gracious to do that. But I said, no, I'm with Denver Bible Church. And she said, all right, if you had 2 minutes to get up on the stage and rebut the group, what they've said for the past hours, what would you say? And I brought up that point. I said that, well, they've been saying that it's cruel. It's, you know, we're anti-science. By anti-science, they mean you don't accept Darwinism. That's what they mean by anti-science. Of course, the Christians I know, so many love science as I do. They're saying that you're anti-science to deny evolution and you're cruel to teach kids that there's a hell. And so because that scares kids. And so I said, well, as a Christian, we teach children that you haven't come from bugs or slime or animals. You are made in God's image and in God's likeness. And he loves you and he would like to live with you forever. But he gives you the choice to live with him or without him forever. And that's what I would tell kids. And you guys tell kids that you've come from animals, from slime to animals to you. And when you die, it's over. You know, to a lot of people, that's not only bleak, it leads to despair. Right. And so they were upset about Christians in public schools. Now, some of the leaders were saying, look, Christians, if anybody's going to rent a public school, you got to let Christians rent the schools, too. But some of the attendees and their questions, they didn't even want Christians to be able to rent a public school. And it was a bit ironic because their anti-Christian rally was held in a Denver public school. That's where it was. And there were plenty of kids there, at least a handful of young kids, you know, preteens, maybe an early teen or two. And they were walking up and down through their tables with their bumper stickers, some sort of vulgar, and all their material. So they didn't have any problem at all presenting their godlessness, which leads to not only bleak, but even a despairing outlook. They didn't have any. And they said, it's wrong to impose your views on others. Well, why do they want government bureaucrats, government public school teachers to say you shouldn't disapprove of homosexuality? Isn't that imposing their view on other on kids. So anyway, the whole event was filled with irony, but it was worth attending. And so Doc Weatherhead, what was her first name? Betsy Weatherhead. She was very interesting. And so she asked me, if you had 2 minutes, how would you respond? And I said, well, I would say that while they're complaining that Christians teach kids that there's a hell, that it's cruel to teach kids that when you die, it's over. Your relationships, the people you love, you'll never get them to see them again. You'll never get to see anyone. You're finished. You're kaput. You're erased. You're just gone. That's easily, that could be seen as cruel to kids. So it turns out, really, it turns out which side is correct, not which side is giving a more difficult lesson to kids. That's not the question. The question is, which is correct? Is there life after death or is there not? So I was on the Muslim Brotherhood saying we're willing to die for our cause and pointing out that could be arranged. I think it was General Patton who is reported to have said to his troops, we're not asking you to die for your country. We're asking you to make the other side die for their country. I like that. That was good. Because the other side was who? The other side was the Germans, the National Socialist in Germany. And it was the Japanese who, if you recall, had kidnapped many thousands of Korean women to force them into sex slavery to service their Japanese army. You remember that? Nation of Japan apologized for that decades later, but I think it was back 15 years ago now. So get the other side to die for their country, but it all comes down, as it so often does, to which side is right. And that's exactly what a lot of people don't like to think of, which side is right. They want to pretend that they're neutral. And so I challenge some of the people there. You guys are claiming you want a public school use policy based on a values neutral approach. Isn't it a bit naive to think you could have a values neutral approach? Isn't that, I mean, haven't we learned by now that that's a naive approach? There's no such thing as a values neutral approach. So now back to, let's see, we've got a number of news stories here. I thought it fascinating that reported by the BBC today that most households in Britain will have, by the government, and I just think this is a tremendous, it doesn't go far enough, but they are blocking pornography on the internet to households in Britain. But there's a way around it. They could go in and say, we want the pornography. Now, pornography, here at Bob and Yurt Live, we take a biblical worldview to the news. We try to understand the news, what is right, what is wrong. And pornography, it's inherently immoral to traffic in human sexuality. So pornography is not only a sin to create it or consume it or sell it, distribute it, but it's also a crime. It's not only a sin. Some things are only a sin, not a crime. Does that make sense? Like covetousness versus theft. If you covet your neighbor's car, that's a sin. If you steal your neighbor's car, that's a sin, and it's also a crime. If you covet your neighbor's wife, that's a sin. If you seduce your neighbor's husband or wife, that's also a crime of adultery. So there's a difference in pornography. It shouldn't be that governments say, well, we'll have a default block on pornography to your household, then you could get around it. It should be that governments don't permit pornography. It should be a criminal offense to videotape or however create pornography. And we recall back to the time when Focus on the Family was on the President's Council on Pornography. And Dr. Dobson helped to produce a report that didn't advocate for pornography to be recriminalized, which is what Christians should advocate, that it's a crime. It's a form of prostitution. What, are we going to legalize prostitution? Well, of course, liberals, libertarians are immoral conservative wannabes. It's sort of, you know, low taxes kind of, but strongly immoral. So liberals, libertarians, homosexuals, and so on, they love the idea of not only pornography, they'd like to decriminalize prostitution. Now, conservative Christians who look to the Bible and the biblical principles God has revealed to us as our guide, we recognize that sex outside of marriage is not only a sin, it's a crime, and that these things should be criminalized. So in, where was it? In Dubai, in the news this week, that a woman reported being raped, and she was sentenced to 16 months in jail because she admitted that, or apparently, that she was willing to have sex even though she wasn't married. And so they sentenced her to 16 months in jail. She was in shock. She's from Norway. And they have punishments for rapists that really this guy who she had this episode with, who may have raped her, his punishment, he got, I forget what it was, 14 months in jail. And there are some Muslim countries where it's awfully difficult for a woman to get the government to prosecute rape. And so if rape is de facto legal in some countries, what are we going to have, an international AUL or Jay Sekulow or Rick Perry from Texas saying, we want to regulate rape in these countries where rape is de facto legal. We want to regulate it. So a Christian leader who's invited by the president to give his counsel should never say we want to regulate something that's criminal. We want to regulate murder. We want to regulate adultery. We want to regulate pornography. We want to regulate rape. Regulate owning black people as slaves, as property. You regulate what is criminal. When you do, you surely confuse the public. You surely confuse the public because they think it's all about regulating time, manner, place, and they see people negotiating with what should be the non-negotiable God-given right to life, and it demeans the right to life in their minds, in the mind of the public. Even pro-lifers know that. Even pro-lifers know that it's not a person, because if it was, they wouldn't have exceptions. That kind of argument. So for Britain to block pornography sites is just a stunning development. I'm just amazed. I am absolutely amazed. Wouldn't it have been great if Dr. James Dobson would have said to President Reagan that it's not only a sin to traffic in human sexuality, but it is a crime to videotape a woman having sex and then to distribute that. It's a crime, and we need to work toward recriminalizing sex outside of marriage. But no, the Focus on the Family director of public policy, Tom Minery, told me at a meeting where the elder board of Denver Bible Church was in Colorado Springs, and he said, no, we disagree with those ideas. You know, we disagree with trying to recriminalize pornography and sex out of marriage and adultery. These are sort of free speech type issues. And we thought, if our Christian leaders at this level, if our Christian leaders think the appropriate thing is to regulate pornography, why in the world would we be surprised when our godless government and judges and politicians, when they promote the most grotesque sexual immorality as justifiable in public policy. How could we possibly be surprised? So Helen Thomas, speaking of hell, this latest report from Dateline Lake of Fire. Dateline Lake of Fire, which is, what is that? That's a city in the West Bank. Lake of Fire, West Bank. We have a report from longtime White House correspondent Helen Thomas. Do we have the audio from this report? Can we hear that?
Any comments on Israel? We're asking everybody today. Any comments
on
Israel?
Tell them to get the out of Palestine.
Ooh. Any better comments?
Helen is one.
Remember, these people are occupied, and it's their land. It's not German, it's not Poland.
So where should they go? What should they do?
They go home.
Where's the home?
Poland.
So the Jews,
Germany.
You think Jews go back to Poland and Germany?
And America and everywhere else.
You know, after World War II, my wife and I read a book called Remember Us by Martin Small, who lived not far from our home. He died recently. He was a survivor of the Holocaust. He spent time in one of the absolute worst concentration camps, Mauthausen. And what a book he wrote, Remember Us. And he writes about his village, his, what do they call it? Shtelt, I think, the Yiddish word, the Hebrew, Polish, Roman, German, Hebrewish, Polish, for their village, their shtelt. And he has a photo, a wedding photo of his family. And from this is from a couple years before the National Socialists took over Germany. And there were, 40, 50 people in this big wedding photo. And the Germans came to town. They didn't kill any of the Jews. They told the Polish police officers to kill the Jews. The first Jew that the chief of police killed, he had married a Jewish woman, the chief of police in Martin Small's village. And he brought his wife and his daughter into the center, the central square of the town, and he shot them both in the heads, his wife and his daughter. And from there, it took only a few days, they rounded up all the Jews, and they killed everybody they could get. Martin survived. Everyone in that photo, I think for one person, was killed within a couple days. And in Poland, many of the Jews who were slaughtered in Poland. There was a mass burial, people buried alive there. And Martin writes that after the war, so the war's ended, and Jews, by the hundreds of thousands, they lost their homes, their businesses, their shops, and so on. And so a number tried to go back, and some went back to Poland after the war, and there was a slaughter by the Poles of the Jews after the war because, hey, they had gotten through the war, they had gotten rid of the Jews, and they sure weren't going to welcome them back. Does that mean every Pole is guilty? No, of course not. But this is how cruel Helen Thomas and the typical racist liberal has a policy of no Jews allowed, right? We're talking about residential neighborhoods in the West Bank or wherever. And her policy is, and now she's reporting from the Lake of Fire. So it's a little harder for her to wire her stories. And but her policy, as is typical of many Democrats, liberals, much of Europe, is no Jews allowed. The Jews have no right to live in these neighborhoods. And I realize there's an international, you know, crisis going on in Israel. I realize that. But when you boil it down, it's no Jews allowed. No Jews allowed. So that's most of the news. Also have a federal judge ruling on a North Dakota abortion law. And he says that, well, he stayed the law. and he used the word progeny in his ruling, which is, he says, from there's precedent from Roe v. Wade and its progeny. And that just, that really, my producer, Daryl Berkey, he really noticed that, because how ironic, right? The U.S. Constitution in the preamble says that we secure these rights for ourselves and our posterity. Progeny, your progeny is like your posterity. I realize it could be used in this sense also as a figure of speech, right? The G-E-N's got to come from genetics and back to Latin and all. Your progeny, we secure these rights for ourselves and our posterity. Surely your offspring is your progeny, your posterity, and that includes the child in the womb. And if you're not securing these rights for all your posterity, that is every actual descendant, which includes the child in the womb. Like if a father dies and he leaves his estate to his three children, two born, one not born. Well, the one not born is still his progeny. It's his posterity. It's his descendant. And U.S. jurisprudence has recognized that for as long as they've ever recognized anything. So it's just, it's simply ironic. Now, North Dakota was an abortion regulation saying which kids you can kill, which you can't kill. I realize the advocates of this regulation would say, well, we don't like this, but we have no choice because they're already killing all these kids. But that's just like negotiating with a terrorist, right? You negotiate with a terrorist, they're killing people, and so you say, okay, we'll let you kill those if you free this one. It's fundamentally immoral. But hey, we have a seminar, Predestination and Free Will, from Bob and Yurt Live. It's quite, if you're interested in that topic, check it out, kgov.com.